Heyo, and here we go. We are on episode number 37. Is that correct, guys?
I believe it is.
Wow. This is We Talk Comics, episode number 37, Kickstarter My Heart. And we're going to have a lot of fun this episode, but first off, going to go around the room as we always do, get everybody to introduce themselves, starting with Brett. And Brett, we're going to introduce ourselves this week by telling everybody what we love besides comics.
I'm going to start off with, Brett. Brett underscore WeTalk, Brett at WeTalkPodcast.com. Get that stuff out of the way.
Two T's.
There you go. And besides my wife and son, I love fantasy football, and I love bad movies, and, I love some other things, but those are two of the biggest things. Oh, and heavy metal music.
Excellent. Chris, what do you love?
Well, I kind of love beer.
And he opens one on the podcast. Bud Light Lime?
Unfortunately, yes.
Oh, avoid that mojito one. Awful.
Bad movies, kung fu movies, zombie movies. Basically, if there's blood and gore of any sort, I'm into that movie. Also love television. That's it. I'm a fairly simple dude. If it's got a story, I'm probably into it.
Nice. And Keith, what else do you love?
Well, I am Keith. I am Cub Reporter K on Twitter. And I love Jawas. I collect Jawas. I have a whole shelf full. I have original art of Jawas. I have a garden gnome. I get the whole lot. I also love my cat and my wife, and who allows the Jawas to be in our house. And I love Hunter Thompson and Jack Kerouac.
All right, and I'm Mo. Mo at We Talk Podcast. Chris, by the way, is Chris at We Talk Podcast, or Chris underscore We Talk. Me, I'm Mo, M-O, no E, at We Talk Podcast, or Mo underscore We Talk. And I love cheese. I mean, seriously, cheese is the best thing ever.
That's my favorite thing. And it shows.
I know, but I've gone a week without eating any meat and or anything that used to be alive, but I'm still eating cheese. So cheese, that's the thing. And I'm pretty sure I'm in love with Brietta, but that's a whole other issue. So other than that, we're going to do Kickstarter My Heart, like I say. We'll get to it. Brett knows what I mean as he shakes his head at me. And other than that, we're going to open up with the news. Now, the news, of course, is sponsored by Comicosity. And what kind of great stuff are you going to get on Comicosity? Well, I'm just looking this week. We saw a preview for The Secret History of D.B. Cooper number 4. We got 10 tweets Thursday with at MattNat2000. We got some news. We got a review of AVX Versus number 3, an interview with writer Malcolm Harris. All sorts of great stuff. Featured articles, reviews, everything else you could probably want. The daily news, if you don't want to wait a week for Keith. This is the best site on the internet for your daily one-stop comic book needs. I'm there myself on average about twice a day. So don't be a geek. Visit Comicosity and proudly be a comic book geek. And now the news with Cub Reporter K.
Well, certainly the biggest news of the week hit just after we recorded last week. So we'll hit it just in passing. DC will be doing a zero month in September, which was rumored for quite a while, and they'll be launching 4 new books at that time, as well as canceling 3, plus the fourth being JLI, which is done in August. The ones that are ending, Captain Atom, Voodoo, and Resurrection Man will end at their zero issue. The ones being added are Talon, a spinoff from the Court of Owls, Sword and Sorcery, which will feature Amethyst, Phantom Stranger, and a 5 years ago storyline book called Team 7, which will feature characters from both the old Wildstorm universe as well as the DC universe.
Amethyst, wasn't that female character, a blonde female character, lived in our world and visited the other world where she was a hero? Is that
Gem
the one?
World? Absolutely, from Gem World, and will be written by the creator of Gem and the Holograms.
Wow.
I think that's one character they didn't need to bring back.
Actually, she also has shorts on the DC Nation right now.
Absolutely.
So they're really preparing her to be bigger in the future of the DC Universe.
This one was rumored for a while. A lot of people pointed to the listing of the Showcase Presents, a complete Amethyst coming out in August or September as a pretty big hint that they were going to be bringing that character back. What else do we have? The big news just broke today, as right before we recorded. Brian Q. Miller, who wrote the Stephanie Brown Batgirl comic and is currently writing Smallville Season 11, will be introducing Stephanie Brown into the Smallville comic book. She's not being seen in the New 52, and there's been a vocal group looking for her return. She will be introduced in the Smallville comic book as Nightwing.
She was also Robin's girlfriend, the Spoiler, correct? Originally?
Correct, that's the one.
Yeah.
Yeah, she was the Spoiler. She was she was briefly Robin, and then was Batgirl for leading up to the relaunch. And October we'll see MacGyver launched from Image Comics.
Sweet! Sweet! You're
Mo
kidding
gets
me!
To be happy.
It's something from the 80s! I love it!
Co-written by Lee David Zlotov?
Yes!
Who is the co-creator of MacGyver.
Oh, that's so awesome! When is that launching?
It launches in October.
Oh, October is when my birthday is. Now we know why.
You know, the good thing about that is that it could be good because at least they can shave off some of the crap that marred the television series, and maybe you can actually take the good stories and just tell them in the comic book, and maybe you will actually have an enjoyable MacGyver series.
It's perfect in my memory.
Yeah.
And that's one of those shows that I want to leave exactly there.
You absolutely should, because I wish to hell that I had never, ever watched another episode of MacGyver.
Well, I own the DVDs, and they're great. And Brett, don't make me come over there, man. I will sit on you.
This is going to suck.
Well, you know what? We are going to review it.
Friggin' rights we are.
Absolutely.
Twice.
Can we do that right now? Just review it right now and get it over with?
Chris hates it.
I got mine already.
That's great. We have two reviews of it absolutely out of the gate.
I'm going to do Chris mine right it. Now. MacGyver is a perfect work, and you should never revisit it. There shouldn't be new stories told. It is a complete work in and of itself. Wait, I'm thinking of something else.
I'm going to watch it as soon as I'm going to stick in the DVD. As soon as this episode is over, I'm going to watch some. My latest watching. I think I watched episode 10 of season 2. So I'll pick it up from there. I got them all. Of course I do. You know, it's a old talk. Not like I'm watching a current TV show.
All right. An update on Davis Sims.
Oh, also screw you guys.
An update on Dave Sims' Kickstarter. He is now at $40,000 with about 2 weeks to go of his $6,000 goal. They keep adding on the bonuses. Take a look at his Kickstarter because there's some sweet stuff there. I've already done my support because I want some of that signed gear that he's got. James Robinson, talking about Earth 2, says that there will continue to be diversity in Earth 2. It is not a Justice Society of America book. It is called Earth 2 and will be about the whole world. This will include a Canadian character. He hasn't decided who. So we can guess.
It's funny because I saw on Twitter that you were that you mentioned that I would be very excited if it was Wesley Dodds, the Golden Age Sandman. I can't necessarily imagine it.
No,
but that
he
mean I wouldn't
be York.
Happy.
He belongs in New York is the problem.
Yes, but I mean you can be a transplanted Canadian in New York. I believe Wolverine has become transplanted over.
He's still Canadian. His origin is so convoluted. I don't know what country he's from anymore. Are you sure he's not from Titan?
Are you sure that Earth 2's Toronto isn't the same as New York?
No.
It is in the movie universe.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, my question is, does it have to be a character that hasn't debuted yet?
That'd be my guess. I mean, they've only debuted three characters. So.
Well, no, but what I'm saying is, what I don't understand about Earth 2 is, it is a different Earth, so does it have to be characters that also aren't on their primary Earth? Like, we used to have an Earth 2 Superman and an Earth 2.
Yes.
So they are definitely keeping it separate. So.
Yes, aside from the characters that we've already seen, Flash, Green Lantern, and the Big Three, they are...
Or killed off.
I guess it's a month old, you can spell that one out. that, yes, they will be staying away from doing second versions of any characters. DC's been wanting to avoid multiple versions of characters. But what we've got coming up, we've got Sandman, we've got Our Man. Neither universe has Dr. Fate yet. There's a lot of characters out there. Really
those guys
names.
All would be good Canadians. You know who I'm suggesting? I don't think he's out there. I don't really know because it's DC, and I'm, Lord knows I won't pay attention. But I'm going to say I would if this guy became
Brian
Canadian.
Wilson Dollar.
What do you mean?
Every time Mo hates on DC.
You owe him a dollar? Shouldn't you have made that bet the other way around so you can make some money? But, so anyways, what the hell was I saying? Oh, yeah, you know who I wouldn't hate? Blue Devil is a Canadian. Be right there.
I don't know if I want to reinforce that stereotype that Canada is cold, though, by giving a guy that's entirely blue.
Well, you know, as long as Alan Scott isn't Canadian as well, I mean, there's two strikes against the guy for some people.
What was this about Dixon, Chris? What did you say?
It's Vixen.
Oh,
she's
Vixen.
The closest to Wolverine.
Oh, you know what? I think Chris might be onto something. I thought you said something about Chuck Dixon when I was talking about Blue Devil.
I could shit on Chuck Dixon for a little while if you want me to.
Yeah,
I got
go ahead.
So much trouble last time that I got a little gun time on that one.
What the hell? The news can wait. What do you have to say about Chuck Dixon?
I have to say, I, in the past, have loved Chuck Dixon. However, after reading the same comic 10,000 times from him, I'm done. I'm finished with Chuck Dixon.
It only took Chris 8,000 more than it took the rest of us.
8,000, exactly. Chris, you know what? I think after 10,000 tries, you have given him a fair shake. Nobody can complain. Or 10,000, yeah. All right, let's move on with the news. Anything else?
Yes, I just want to end with the May sales numbers. Now, there's always a lot of doom and gloom in the sales numbers. This isn't one of those times. May 2012, according to the Comics Chronicles, which is the site we get our sales numbers from, love that site, May 2012 is the biggest month for comics, non-inflation adjusted dollars, in the length of time that Diamond has been officially giving the numbers, and in their estimation, is the best month since 1995. It is remarkable numbers. We've got two issues of AVX as the top two books, Batman as the top DC, Justice League, the Batman Annual, AVX Versus, and then some more DC going down, actually, for quite a bit. So a remarkable month for comics.
That's great. That's awesome. That's awesome. Now, there was a big news item that something we had discussed earlier, and we had speculated that this may be the character who came out for DC. This has happened since our last episode. You're not going to bring it up?
I think everybody knows.
It doesn't. We haven't discussed it, though, now that it's officially announced.
Yes, as had been rumored for a little bit, Alan Scott is the gay character that has been introduced in Earth 2. Great interview with James Robinson that I heard the other day on Comic Vine, a different podcast. Listen to them after you listen to us. That he basically laid out why he chose that character, and it was a choice based on the way it was going is all the characters were being de-aged, which meant that none of them will have kids, which means that Obsidian and Jade were out of the picture, at least for now. And he thought that was a logical reason to use Alan Scott. So rather than Obsidian goes away because he chose Alan Scott, it's actually the vice versa, that he chose Alan Scott because Obsidian was already gone.
So anybody have any other thoughts or opinions on that?
I really liked the story. I really enjoyed the story.
I enjoyed the story as well. I will say I kind of wish they had picked a character that mattered a little bit more. I think if they chose Wally West, for example, we definitely could have had more stories. But let's face it, I mean, Sentinel / the Green Lantern, he hasn't been relevant ever. I mean, as soon as Hal Jordan showed up on the scene, he didn't matter anymore. If all of a sudden DC gets a whole bunch of homophobic letters or stuff, they'll just write them out. No one's going to miss them.
Well, I don't think they'll necessarily write him out. He's not minor a character. He's not, like, totally unimportant. He's not Booster Gold. But but what I do think... I kind of agree with you, Chris. I think they kept on talking about a major character. And I don't know how much more of a major character he is than Northstar, who's been around for a while but hasn't been a truly major character. I mean, it's not... It's a step in the right direction, but I don't think it's as big a deal as they would have liked it to have been, personally.
Oh, come on. Northstar is just a clone of the Wonder Twins. How can you even compare the two? Northstar doesn't even count.
He doesn't know who you are either.
I think it's unfortunate just because when they named Alan Scott, it gives all of the crazy folk who are against it the chance to talk about it. And when they talk about it, as I've seen several times on the websites that I go to read their insane articles, they always show the Hal Jordan Green Lantern in the picture. And so it's this... They are trying to, like, oh my lord, it's Green Lantern, who's gay, and it's just like,
yeah. Well, like I said, I don't know that it. I don't know that it quite. Certainly wasn't as shocking as. I don't know if shocking is the right word. Actually, it wasn't as. I think it wasn't as impactful as I think that they had hoped.
But it I want to say that DC's gotten a lot of flack for making a big deal out of it, and they didn't actually. This was like the least big deal they could have made. I mean,
they had a press conference though for it.
No, it was already a story when they had a press conference. People went to them wanting a press conference. It came out at a panel where Didio was asked, "Why don't you have any more gay characters?" He said, "Oh yeah, a couple weeks we're going to have one. It's going to be in Earth 2." That was it. And then other people picked it up. I mean, that's the opposite of how you launch a story.
But it did get. But here's the thing. I disagree with what you're saying, Keith. You have a point. I'm not saying you're 100% wrong. But the thing is, they said it's a major character. Those are their words.
Iconic, actually, is their word, and I would say that it is an iconic character.
I don't think it's an iconic character. It's a tenured character, perhaps. But there's a difference between that and iconic.
I'm with Keith on this one.
You think he's iconic?
Yeah. He is Green Lantern.
He's not the Green Lantern anybody knows. Like I say, he's tenured, but not necessarily iconic. Brett's thinking it over. He's going both sides. He's back and forth. I can see him. Come on, Brett.
You've known
me the longest.
Yes. So you're so by that token, you're tenured, and I'm going to go with Keith.
Stuck.
As a comic book fan, I think that the Alan Scott Green Lantern is a character that all of us know. And the truth is that for them to suddenly say that this is the homosexual character, it is a strong enough statement without having to go to Tim Drake or even like further in like a Bruce Wayne or something like that. Which would just be patently ridiculous.
All right, cool. I love that we got a little discussion finally going out of this, and everybody gave me an opinion.
But Keith has another point.
Just one last point. I had a great laugh from a blog I read that said that the whole discussion of it should have been this character, it should have been that character. Try to imagine that one of your two kids has come to you and come out, and you're like, if only it had been your brother. That would have been better. It is Alan Scott. It's they said it was going to be an Earth 2 character. I don't know what other Earth 2 character would have fit your parameters.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't read Earth 2. DC sucks. That's another buck.
Brian's only getting $1 per episode.
Well, he's only getting... Oh, shit, okay. Well, then I won't bother doing that.
And that's the news.
I was hoping to make you really pay out of pocket here. Well, still, there's 52 episodes a year. That's $52 you can do, and you know what? Yeah, that's cool. Buy yourself some trades. And that is the news. So we're going to move on to Kickstarter My Heart. So basically, the concept from this came is somebody contacted me, said he had a Kickstarter campaign, and that he asked if we'd be interested in interviewing him. And I sent the email out to the guys, and somebody else mentioned they had knew somebody else who had a Kickstarter book that they wanted to interview on. And we kind of started kicking it around that we could do an episode about Kickstarter, interview some people from it. So we've got lined up some interviews from people who are doing Kickstarter campaigns or a similar idea. And Brett came up with the title Kickstarter My Heart. And Brett, I want to talk to you a little bit about the concept of Kickstarter, because I first heard about this from you before I heard it from anybody else. This is probably 2 years ago when you and I were kind of tossing around some of our ideas that we have that we were considering or still considering. And you brought this idea to me. So where did you first hear about Kickstarter, and what are kind of your thoughts? Go ahead. The floor is yours.
Well, the first time I heard about Kickstarter, I actually think it was probably about a year, maybe a year and a half ago. And it was because Neil Gaiman had tweeted somebody's Kickstarter, and they were doing a short animated film based on one of his short stories. And so I saw this, and I thought, well, that's crazy. That's very interesting. And then when I looked at it, I thought, really? You know, this Kickstarter thing allows you to get funding, you know, by the crowd. And that had been something that we were kind of discussing for other projects anyways. So to find out that there was an actual website that you could go to and, thank you, and sign up on to do that, you know, really intrigued me. And I think that the number one thing about Kickstarter that I like the most is the fact that it offers different levels for you to commit, but it also offers things for that. So you don't have to feel like you need to put down $100 for everything. I mean, you can put down $5 and you get something for that. Maybe it's a mention on a website, maybe it's the mention in the credits of something, but that's something for your $5. Sure, you can go to $100, you can go to any total, but the neat thing is that it's up to the person who's got the Kickstarter, who started the Kickstarter, to continue to come up with these interesting incentive offers. And so to me, I thought that was really interesting. And now there's lots of different ones coming out. I mean, there's Indiegogo, which I know we have a few interviews from, and from people who are on Indiegogo. And I know that there's another one that's based around, I believe, charitable donations and stuff like that. I'm not completely sure what the name of it is. But, you know, it's a really interesting concept, and I think that we're starting to see it become a bigger deal in comic books. And it's not just from the new people in comic books. It's also from established people in the industry who are looking to, I think, avoid some of the politics of the bigger companies.
Yeah, you know, we were talking about, we saw this idea. We were talking about whether or not we could use this for any of our concepts that we were kicking around. Some of them related to this podcast, some not. And this is where Brett kind of brought it to me, because we were largely talking about crowdsourcing. The most well-known crowdsourcing site in the world would be Wikipedia, in that it allows people to create content for somebody else and maintain it and edit it. And crowdsourcing is one of the great ways that the Internet is showing potential. And Kickstarter is an offshoot of this to a large degree. Keith, when did you first hear about Kickstarter, and what did you think?
Well, I kind of encountered it on the periphery for a while. Never really paid much attention to it until I came across Jimmy Palmiotti's Queen Crab graphic novel, which was funded through Kickstarter. And I'd always thought of it as something for indies. But he had used Kickstarter to fund a full graphic novel that was then available, once it got printed, was distributed through Image. So that's when I started really kind of paying attention to this. And, you know, I've now funded musicians that are indie musicians that I really like, graphic novels. I'm in for the Dave Sim, as I mentioned earlier in the episode. And I'm already supporting the creator that we have on for an interview this episode.
Chris, where did you first hear about Kickstarter?
Actually, it's been in the periphery for a long time. I keep hearing about cool projects, and I've looked at a couple, but I've never really been all that interested in going through all the proposals. But I will say, in researching this show, I'm excited about a ton of projects that are trying to get funding now. Now that I've gone through 5 or 10, I can really see myself doing a lot of comic shopping here. Because that's what you're basically doing, is you're pre-ordering comic books. This is a great concept. I think I'm in for I'm in for a long time. I had a ton of fun researching this this Kickstarter, and I can easily see myself coming back every week and, you know, throwing $5 or $20 at people that I think need to get their work out there. I haven't really explored it until this week, and now it's just this new thing that I'm loving.
Now, as you say that, what do you kind of see that, since you've explored it a little bit, what do you kind of see, perhaps, Chris, as some of the things that it can do to improve?
Well, I think really we're at a good stage right now. We just have to grow the crowd sourcing movement. I would like to see more focus on these websites. It would be nice to get a crowdfunding website just for comic books. I found myself getting very distracted looking at movies and artists recording artists and like that. And really, I would prefer to be able to just go to one place and look at comic books, and then go to another place and look at movies that maybe could use my funding or my help.
Keith, you had an opinion on that as well?
Well, the biggest challenge with anything like this, it's the same challenge we see on Twitter. People that hustle for their Twitter followers, like Mo and I. Mo's got, what do you got, about 800-900 followers? 1,000? I have about 500.
I got more on my We Talk Wrestling one. I got about, I think it's about 1,800 over there, and about 700 personally, so 2,500 combined.
Yeah, so we are at the indie level. We're at the unsigned level. And then you have gigantic names who have in the millions of followers. And this is the risk of anything like this, is that it seems like you're leveling the playing field for a while, but when bigger names start getting in, you know, you look at the Dave Sim one, $40,000, a $6,000 goal. People are still supporting this, even though it is vastly above its original goal. And it's great that he's got long-term plans for what to do with that money, but I'm looking at other ones, like the ones that Chris and I are talking about, that are struggling for their $2,000 or $3,000 and squeaking by. And the playing field that won't stay level for very long. The big challenge is is the perks and the bonuses, the gifts you get at various levels. That's why Dave Sims is where it's at, because he can offer autographed things, prints, out-of-print stuff, material that you're not going to be able to find anywhere else, and he just writes his name on it, and it's worth money, or worth money to me. So I think that's the biggest challenge of it right now.
I think Keith brings up an interesting point there, but I do want to bring up, there was a book, it's called Sullivan Sluggers. Now, it's written by Mark Andrew Smith, and he has written for Image, Gladstone's World, or School for World Conquerors, and New Brighton Archaeological Society, and The Amazing Joy Buzzers. Those are some of his credits for Image, but not major titles. Now, he's done a couple Kickstarters in the past, and he was only getting a few thousand dollars. I'm not even sure he met his goal. He's not a major name. He, on this latest project, Sullivan Sluggers, is of a pledge goal, or looking for a goal of 6,000. He is currently at 85,000. And he is not a big name. So I don't know that it's just the major names who are going to achieve this. Now, this project that he has even gotten off of Kickstarter, a movie studio's interest and has been optioned before it's even come out. So the Kickstarter has more potential, and I don't know that it's just the bigger names. The question happens, what would happen if DC and Marvel decided to go this route for some of their projects? Perhaps that would be too much. I don't know. Brett, what do you think?
I'm not 100% sure that people would accept it, per se, but maybe they would. Because, again, if you're offering somebody, you know, a Geoff Johns signed comic book, you know, a whole bunch of Geoff Johns crap or Scott Snyder or what have you, then, you know, maybe people are going to be interested. And, you know, maybe there needs to be almost a secondary Kickstarter where for a more professional basis versus a more independent basis. But I don't know. It's an interesting idea, and I think that maybe people would accept it, and maybe they wouldn't.
So, Brett, where do you think it is going to evolve to Kickstarter, and where would you like it to evolve to?
I like the fact right now that exactly where it is. I mean, you have established people, you have independent people, and right now it looks like anybody can get funding as long as you have a good, solid project. And I think part of it, too, is the incentives. I think if your incentives are rather average and boring, you're probably less likely to get the funding as easily. Whereas those people who are really willing to hustle for it, who are willing to find good, interesting, and unique incentives, they're probably going to get their funding, especially, and most importantly, if they have a good project and can really show something from that project. And so I think that it does allow for people to really get these projects out there that are more personal to them. And I do hope that it stays and evolves and continues with the personal projects, and that it doesn't become like, oh, well, I'm doing something for a company and I just need to get more money so that the company will truly accept me doing it or what have you. I want it to be about personal projects that these people are passionate about, because that will sell it for me.
You know, one of the things that Sullivan Sluggers, that they did, and they, like I say, they're $80,000 more than what their goal was. One of the things that they did was they actually put up advertisement for their Kickstarter campaign up on the Pirate Bay BitTorrent site. And that's one of the things that actually helped drive traffic to them and led to, which is funny because, you know, it's certainly the evils of torrents as well. But it's funny that they used that to help drive traffic to them and get to the goals that they're at now. Does anybody have an opinion on that?
Just surprised that there was advertising other than porn on a BitTorrent. I thought they only accepted porn.
That's just the ones you go on. The front page of Pirate Bay often actually has somebody doing an independent or smaller project.
I mean, again, I think it comes down to how much people are willing to shill and how far outside of that box that they're willing to go. And so, I mean, you know, my hat's off to them for finding something that I don't think most anybody else would think of.
So any final thoughts on Kickstarter then? First off, we'll go around to you and the idea of it. Keith?
I love the idea. Like Chris said, it's been interesting looking at what kind of perks are available and incentives. Getting in on the ground floor and, you know, helping out, you know, putting my money where my mouth is. You know, I talk a lot about small press. I talk a lot about indies. And here's a way for me to do more than just buy a comic when I find it on the shelf, but to actually make a comic happen, to help be part of that work getting onto the shelves. It's exciting. And, you know, for the music artists that I've supported as well, it's the same. It's incentives are nice, but it's wonderful that I can just do an end run around the whole business of it and help the creator create work.
Final thoughts, Chris?
Yeah, I don't really know. I just know somehow Uwe Boll is going to be able to make more films because of Kickstarter. And I'm all for it, but
I believe we should now shut down Kickstarter. I think that's incentive
Oh, man. Alone in the Dark, that's the bomb.
Oh, that was the bomb, all right.
That was 5 minutes short of an awesome movie, right there. It was the last 5 minutes, unfortunately.
What the hell are you talking about? All right, since we've had that completely ludicrous final thought from Chris, I'll just give mine. I kind of agree with what Keith is saying. In this world where so often I look at the price of a product and I feel like I am being ripped off, I feel like not enough of it is going to the people who truly deserve it, I have a little bit of distrust towards some of the larger corporations, this is a great way for me to pick and choose and support and know I'm getting it in the hands of those people who really deserve it. It's much like Brett has said, I think it was Brett who said that he loves when he's at a convention and he gets to give the money directly to the creator and he doesn't have to worry about for an autograph or a book or a drawing or whatever. He doesn't have to worry about, you know, it going through somebody else's hands. And this is that same idea. And it's great. Crowdsourcing is a great concept. It's one of the exciting young... The internet is a young medium still. It's one of the exciting potentials from it. It's nice to see that it can't do something other than porn. Because I personally am offended by those sites and won't spend between more than 10 to 15 hours a week on one. So it's just a very exciting, and it's good to be interesting to see where it evolves. It has a lot of places to go. It's very early. Kickstarter, good on whoever started this. That person, the fact that we don't know his name, kind of is a damn shame because everybody probably should. Brett, final thoughts.
Well, you're right. I do say that all the time that you know, I'm happy to give the creators money directly, and this is that the best way to do that. I think the thing to me is that this helps bring people closer to the creators, because in the case of the one that I wound up supporting, to try to get an interview for this podcast, you know, she tweeted out the fact that I supported her, and there was an instant moment there where it's just like, yes, I am in contact with this creator. And I think that is very easy to happen now. Whereas when you talk about the larger comics that just come out, you don't necessarily have the ability to have instant contact or a reason to, per se. But this gives that reason, because it's just like, I'm already saying, look, I've supported your work. I'm giving you money. Bam.
You know, in a world where I think all of us love Twitter because it makes us feel like we're closer to the creators, because I know Keith has talked about how he still gets a buzz from the fact that he'll send something out on Twitter and somebody who he's been reading for 15 years will react to him. This is kind of along that same lines, I think, to some degree.
Yeah, it's great. It gives Keith the chance to talk to Jimmy Palmiotti.
Yeah, there you go. It's like bringing you closer to people that are creators and people that you love something that you love. I'm just going to give a shout out because I have just looked it up. Perry Chan, Yancey Strickler, and Charles Adler were the people who founded this in 2008. So it's only 4 years old, and those are the names we should remember and thank them for it. So let's now move on to a couple of the – Chris did two interviews. So why don't you introduce one? What we'll do is we'll get Chris to introduce one, Keith one. I'll throw it to mine, and then we'll come back to you, Chris, for your final one. So do one of your two here.
All righty. And I'll be testing you on those names next week, Mo.
Okay.
All right. Okay. Now that we're done with that bull crap where we're talking about stuff we don't have any idea about, let's get – to what we're here to about.
Chris,
talk
if
about.
We didn't do that, we wouldn't have a podcast.
Yes. No, exactly. But let's get to what we're here to talk about. We talk comics, let's talk some comics. And this week, I talked to Chris Merkley. He's the writer of a book on Indiegogo, which is funding over there, which is a site similar to Kickstarter. That it's called Nowadays. And I gotta say, guys, get your wallets out, because I will personally hunt you down if you don't fund this book. This is a book I need to get in my collection. I'm I'm funding it myself to get a t-shirt and a book. This is a book we need. And I really like talking to Chris. Really entertaining interview, I think. We're both zombie geeks, so we do get a little bit into the zombie genre. I do just make an offhand reference to Barbara, which is a reference to the Night of the Living Dead. If you don't get that, what are you doing with your life? Well, here's the interview. I'm sitting down today with Kurt Martell, and we're interviewing people with Indiegogo and Kickstarter projects. He has a book that is up for funding on Indiegogo. And Kurt, why don't you tell us about your book?
All right. Well, nowadays is it's the zombie apocalypse has come upon us, and I guess the zombie genre has been overblown and perhaps oversaturated in the last decade or so, but it was something that I started writing before the zombie genre really blew up. It was an idea that I had a long time ago to sort of revive and rejuvenate the zombie genre. And I still feel it does that because it's a different idea. It sort of ties zombies and vampire lore together in that the undead are waking up, but they still have their minds and they can think and talk and ration. And so it's not just a tale about monsters. It's sort of a morality tale that you have the choice to be a monster or not. And it's all set in Northern Ontario, where I'm from, on a desolate highway. So it's sort of in the middle of nowhere, not in the cities where we've seen, you know, where there's thousands of zombies around a mall, but like, you know, groups of travelers and stuff interacting with each other during this zombie apocalypse.
I mean, this is not a small project you're trying to find, is it?
No, not at all.
300 pages? Is that the...
Yeah, once you throw in chapter, like all the covers, like there's a cover for each chapter and credits and everything like that. Yeah, it's 300 pages. It would be 12 issues of comic put together with, chapter heads and credits and everything like that. So yeah, it's something that my illustrator and I have been working on. He's been illustrating for 2 years straight to get this done.
And this is a finished project. It's not like Kickstarters or Indiegogo projects that, you know, I mean, nothing's put together. This is complete.
It's done.
Yeah. It's ready to go.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, that gives you a huge heads up right there that you're serious about this and this is really something that you want to do. Now, your partner in this project is Chris Merkley.
Chris Merkley.
He's the illustrator, or does he share a co-writing credit with you?
Well, he's the illustrator. It was something that I... Nowadays was something that I started writing back in 99, and I moved back to Thunder Bay from Toronto back in 2004, and I was at the point where I was starting to feel very proud of this project, and I had been reading comic books for about, you know, 6 or 7 years, and I thought this would be a great book. And so I was looking for an illustrator for 2 or 3 years, and I just couldn't find anyone to commit. And then Chris, who was a friend of mine, I worked with him briefly before I left for Toronto, and we sort of stayed in touch every time I was back home or whatever. Him and his wife were across the country and back, and he had moved back to Thunder Bay specifically to work on comics. And so he sort of fell into my lap because him and his wife moved to the street behind us. And so that's the thing, is I had a project that I was ready to go. I was looking for an illustrator. He was looking for a project to work on. And we were lucky enough to sort of fall into each other's laps, and we knew that we had something worthwhile. And so that's where we found initial funding to actually get the project done, was through the Ontario Arts Council. They gave us a grant a few years ago to sort of pay us for the cost of living while we slaved away on this book.
Now, Chris has a real photorealistic style, which I have to tell you, in the past, I have not been a fan of. But just looking at the three YouTube videos I've been able to find and your proposal, I have to say, for a zombie book, this looks fantastic.
It's really gritty. He came back with a look when I gave him test pages. He came back with a look that blew my mind. Like, it was way more than I could have expected. And And I had that idea to use photography, and well, when I thought it was going to be me doing it by myself, I had the idea to take pictures and hire actors because I have no artistic talent when it comes to drawing and stuff. And I thought the only way I'm going to get this done is if I do it myself. And so I had that idea, but it, you know, it never really took off. And then, yeah, Chris came along with the same idea. Yeah. His Photoshop skills and artistic merit, really, yeah, just blew my mind.
Now, as I said, I've only seen the YouTube videos and your proposal. But I have to say, It screams Thunder Bay. Did you ever consider sending it anywhere else but Thunder Bay?
That was the thing. When I started writing it, I was moving to Toronto. And so it was one of those things where, you know, the writer's mantra, write what you know. Instead of setting it, you know, in Toronto or cottage country around Toronto, I know Thunder Bay and I know Northern Ontario. And a lot of the people in the book are people I would have grown up with or people that I know in my community. So that it's always been Thunder Bay. It's always been, you know, just around Thunder Bay and in the forests and highways of Northern Ontario.
Now, I wasn't able to glean from the little I viewed. Does your series actually have a true protagonist?
Well, it's always changing because that's the thing about this story is that our main characters are getting bit and turning into zombies. And so you're not sure whether to trust them. There's a few that are untrustable and there's a few that are trustable. And so you have zombies working with humans in some cases. And that's where the morality tale comes in. It's sort of a reflection of our society. If you were given that power, what would you do? You know, there are definitely those that are greedy and hungry for power that probably would turn on their fellow humans. And then there are those that are above that and follow the golden rule and stay moral in that even though, you know, they need this life to sort of support themselves, they know that, you know, it's wrong in the long run. So it's hard to say. It's a gray line as to who the real protagonist is. There are definitely some that stand out. It's shady, and you can't really trust everyone. You're not sure how far to trust people.
Okay, and I mean, 10 years for one project, I can't even imagine. I mean, I have my own short writings and like that, but 10 years, how much did it change from what you set out to do? And what you finished with?
It definitely grew. It definitely matured because when I first started writing it, I was in my early 20s and just out of film school. And, you know, a lot of the characters started as cliches that in this story, a good portion of the people that we follow are tree planters and they've been sentenced to tree plant. To get them away from whatever it was that got them in trouble in the first place. But it started off as a group of filmmakers because I was just out of film school, so I kind of knew filmmaking, right? And I thought, it's going to be a group of filmmakers out in the woods, and all of a sudden there's zombies. And then it changed after a couple drafts just because I thought it was kind of hokey. And then, of course, Romero's Diary of the Dead came out, and I was like, woo, all right, dodged a bullet there.
Wow, we were such in sync there. As soon as you started describing me, I thought, Diary of the Dead, right there.
Yeah, exactly. And I saw Diary of the Dead, and I was like, wow, like, I have friends in the film industry in Toronto who have crossed paths with Romero and worked on Land of the Dead and stuff like that. And I wondered, you know, did someone tell him the story of what my story was about? Like, did someone just happen to mention that to him while he was working on Land of the Dead? Because Diary of the Dead was pretty close to the idea that I had. I liked his idea of using available cameras to tell the story. I thought that was really neat. Mine didn't go that way. But when I saw it, I was like, okay, yeah, I'm so glad I changed it. And it had been years before Diary of the Dead came out. But yeah, a lot of the characters were there's one character who really grew. She was like the blonde girl who screams at everything and you can't wait till she dies because she's just annoying. But then she just wasn't real. So over the years, she matured as a character, and in her own right, she's become one of the more prominent and stronger characters in the book. So yeah, everybody sort of went through a maturing process as we went through, draft after draft of the story.
So basically what you're saying is you started out with a Barbara and then you got the Barbara from the remake.
Exactly. Yes, exactly. Yeah, I love that. I love that analogy.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Obviously, you come from a film background. Mm-hmm. Other than the obvious, we're talking George A. Romero's Night of the Living Dead. Did you take any inspiration for any other films during this era?
Originally, when I started writing this, I likened the story to Interview with the Vampire meets the Road Warrior with a zombie element, because, like I said, I started writing this before the zombie genre really came back. So I was watching Evil Dead, the Evil Dead series, and Night of the Living Dead, like the Tom Savini remake. I really love that one. And Romero's Dawn of the Dead over and over again, right? Like, what else did we have to watch for zombie movies, you know, up until the early 2000s? So those were really the movies that I would be writing, and, you know, Night of the Living Dead was playing in the background, and I, you know, for like the 50th time in my life watching that film. It's sort of, inspiration to, you know, keep me in zombie mode. But yeah, I really like the idea of a road movie, a travel movie, and growing up loving the Road Warrior, I kind of like that. And Interview with the Vampire actually was, where I kind of, had the idea to link zombies and vampires, this lust for blood, and that zombies weren't, a separate monster, a separate entity from what vampires were. So I would definitely give credit to that. And I think there is actually one of the videos that I released where I talk about that. I gave Anne Rice credit for planting that in my mind. So I think there was a section in Interview where Louis went to Europe looking for other vampires. And, you know, for a while, all he could find was some decrepit zombie monster.
Well, I to tell you the truth, I am so glad in your introduction to this comic book, you mentioned vampires coming into your interview. You know, vampires, like, I didn't want to put vampire spin on this, but there is a vampire element. I'm so glad you mentioned that. Okay, this is We Talk Comic Books, and we always ask this question, or we usually ask this question, or I ask this question. What comic books are you reading, or are you reading comics?
Yeah, definitely. And I'll tell you one thing. I regret not picking up The Walking Dead number one, standing there in the comic book store years ago thinking, no, I'm writing a zombie story. I can't support this. And if I had been supporting Walking Dead from the beginning, I could probably fund the printing of this book now by selling my comic book collection. But I'm definitely reading The Walking Dead. And the new DC relaunch, I was actually I was in the comic book store a couple hours ago with Chris, my illustrator, and I was showing him all of the DC comics that I'm reading. Because when I started picking up Batman because I wanted to improve on my storyboarding skills, and then I just got addicted to Batman because I didn't realize it was so dark when I first started reading it. So that introduced me to DC. So I'm reading all the Batman titles, and I'm really liking Animal Man and Swamp Thing, and I just picked up Dial H. Dial H is amazing.
I was going to ask you about that because that's my favorite DC New 32 right now. Really love this new protagonist, the new dialer they have. Just so unusual.
I know, and that's the thing is that one of the kids that works at the comic book store, he's my link because he reads it all, and he's like, you got to check out Dial H. So I picked it up on a whim, and I read issue one, and I was like, oh, this is cool. And then I just finished issue two the other day, and I'm hooked on Dial H. And the Animal Man and Swamp Thing, I'm really loving the artwork for and the stories for. So, between all of the Batman titles and the horror mags with DC, Spider-Man, I'm a fan of Spidey, and who else am I reading? It's become, over the years, it's become an addiction. What started as trying to improve my storyboarding skills is now, it's my hookup every week.
Alrighty, just to end off, could you run through some of the rewards people can get for funding your project?
Right. Okay. Well, let me think. We start off with perks for $5. Of course, any donation gets you good karma because we're tapped in with the universe and the universe is backing us. So karma is always on our side and it's there for the taking. We have magnets, stickers, and buttons for $5. Art cards. Once you get to the $10. Prints and t-shirts. There's actually, we're doing a one-of-a-kind t-shirts. Each t-shirt's going to be different for the $100 donators. $40 gets you a signed copy of the book, And then we're doing some interesting stuff, and we've had some takers for $200 and more. We're doing a zombie yearbook at the back of the book to really, thank and promote those people who are helping us with those amounts. And local businesses are now jumping into this as well. But what we are doing is taking the likeness of anybody donating that much, and we're turning you into a zombie and doing a little write-up about you and putting you in our zombie yearbook. And then Chris, he's an amazing artist. He has offered, I don't know if we've had any takers yet. I think we might have one pretty soon, though. For $750, he'll actually do you a painting of an element of the book. And then we put in this one for $1,000 that, if the book takes off and we're able to do future chapters, we will write you in, your likeness, your personality, into the book as a character. And we've already had one taker for that, so I'd love to have more. But when we were thinking of perks, Chris actually, and, him and his wife aren't planning on having children. He put, for $1,000, I'll give you my firstborn. And I was like, well, I am pretty sure you're not having kids, so why don't we do something that's a little more likely? And, if we happen to have the good grace to do more books or along this title, we'll write somebody in as a character. So yeah, art cards, buttons, magnets, t-shirts, the zombie yearbook, and character likenesses. I don't know if I've missed anything else. There's a slew of nowadays things.
No, I think you got it all there. I've been making a little checklist going on here. Yes, thank you oh so much. I'm very excited to seeing this new book, and you will have my donation to receive a copy ASAP. Thank you very much.
I can't wait to put that book in your hands, Chris.
Thank you very much, Chris. And Keith, introduce your interview.
I talked to Ryan Ferrier, creator of Tiger Lawyer, and I'll let him talk about the concept of Tiger Lawyer, but I do want to plug right away, Hell Yeah, the June issue, will start having one-page Tiger Lawyer stories in it, starting in the upcoming issue, just a week away. So here's Ryan Ferrier talking about his Indiegogo for Tiger Lawyer issue 2. All right, we're talking to Ryan Ferrier, creator, writer of Tiger Lawyer. Now, you self-published number 1 of Tiger Lawyer, and now you're going to Indiegogo to raise money for Tiger Lawyer 2. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. We debuted the first issue in April at the Calgary Comic and Entertainment Expo, and that tied in pretty nicely with getting a backup feature in Hell Yeah from Image. So what we're doing is we want to really push forward on issue 2. So that's going to come out at the end of the month.
And tell us a bit about what Tiger Lawyer is.
Tiger Lawyer is... It is exactly what it sounds like. It's a comic book about a tiger that is a lawyer. But I kind of wanted to put a different twist on it, because talking tigers isn't different enough already. So, but what I wanted to do is, tackle a lot of different genres and styles. Not only because I think that the character kind of lends to a lot of versatility, but also as a writer, I want to try different things out. So for example, the first issue has 2 stories, and each subsequent issue is going to have 2 stories as well. It's going to be like in a flipbook format. And, the first issue has one story that's like a, more of a satire. It's more of a comedy. And then the other side, the other story is a serious kind of crime noir. So it's this really fun, like, experimentation project. And I like to work with, just a bunch of different artists and see how far and crazy we can kind of push things, not only in a narrative sense, but in a comic sense. We want to do like really fun things like centerfolds. And I toyed around with the idea of doing a pop-up at some point. So it's really just about having fun.
And number 2 will be self-published as well.
Yeah, so we're gonna keep going, in the near future, self-published. But I'm not sure if, you know, maybe I'll pitch it at some point, but for now it's going to be self-published, yeah.
Well, if it gets picked up by someone, then all of our copies of number one will be worth a fortune.
I know.
We can all retire.
Yes.
Okay, so you've got your Indiegogo happening. It's running until the 23rd of June.
Yep.
Now, tell us what kind of perks you can get if you support Tiger Lawyer on Indiegogo.
Yeah, so with the Indiegogo, we really wanted to make it, less about just asking for money and more an extension of the online store. So we really wanted to saturate it with a lot of perks, you know, and make it really worthwhile to donate. So like we have a bunch of stuff going right now, everything from comics. You can get Tiger Lawyer 1, you get Tiger Lawyer 2, you can get a variety of mediums, print, digital, or both. We have combos with prints, like 11 by 17 prints. We've got signed copies of Hell Yeah or Glory from Joe Keating over at Image. He's graciously offered to donate some of those to funders. We're also but one of the perks is original artwork from issue 1 or issue 2. So this is the actual like penciled and inked pages from Vic Malhotra, who does the noir stories. And we're also the highest perk we're offering is the original cover for the first Tiger Lawyer from Michael Walsh, which is pretty awesome. I want it myself. But other than that, we're also doing I'm offering script reviews as well as lettering packages. So if there's other people that, you know, want a 6 to 8 page comic or pitch lettered, they can get that as well.
All right. And as we record this with about a dozen days to go, you are just over $2,000 of the 3,000 goal. So still a lot of those perks available, still a lot of great opportunities to support this book.
Mm-hmm.
Now, for those who haven't been lucky enough to get a copy of Tiger Lawyer number one yet, how can they get a copy?
It's very easy. They can get a copy through the Indiegogo campaign if they want. That's one of the perks, one of the lower level perks. But there's still copies to be had at the online store, and you can get there by visiting the official site, and that's tigerlawyercomic.com. And when you go to the site, there's a big button, you can't miss it, and then I'll take you to the big cartel store, and you can get that in print or a instant download digital file, or you can get both. And also there's going to be some stores in Calgary and Edmonton that will be stocking it, and we're going to look to expand within, you know, the next few months as well. So in Canada anyways, hopefully you'll be able to see it in person. And also if you happen to be in San Diego Comic-Con, I won't be there in like an official presence. I'll just be walking around, but I'll try to keep a few copies on me. So if anyone stops me at San Diego, if there's any like creepy online people that know what I look like and see me, then, I can give you one then too.
You'll be the guy in the Tiger Lawyer t-shirt.
Yeah, exactly. Just look for the giant tiger. The real life tiger. I'll try and bring a real life tiger with me.
Now, outside of the sales pitch itself, how's your experience been with Indiegogo so far?
It's been really good. It's you know, it's very strange having to essentially ask for money, but I think that, you know, I again try to kind of think of it as an extension of an online store. So like, we really do want to offer things and, you know, get the, it's more about spreading the word on the comic too. But it's, you know, it's really tough self-publishing. Tiger Lawyer is like my first self-published comic. So it's, you realize very fast just how hard it is to self-publish just from a financial, you know, stance. So it's kind of nice to to not have to put all your eggs in one basket in the sense of like, you know, you have to wait until you sell comics before you make any money back. So it's nice to while you're doing this campaign to kind of have some of the stuff, the money coming in as well. Because I don't know if you know this, but with, because Indiegogo is like the Canadian version of Kickstarter. And with Kickstarter, you don't get paid until you meet your goal. Like once the 40 days or 30 days or however long your campaign is over. So if you don't meet your goal, then it's kind of all for nothing. But with Indiegogo, it's nice because, you know, as people are funding, you actually get to use the donations. So like I've been, you know, paying the artists and stuff like that. And as we've been making it, so it's nice. It's nice in that sense. But it's been pleasant. It's been really fun too, just getting a chance to, you know, promote and stuff like that and having people dig it. It's been especially fun on Twitter too, because I'm the creepy guy that likes to Twitter search, you know, the stuff that he's doing. It's like Googling your own name, but it's like the comic equivalent. So I've been, you know, every now and then I'll do a Twitter search on Tiger Lawyer and see what people are saying. And it's been, you know, pretty positive. So that's fun. People are digging the campaign. So actually it's more people have been using, the campaign to get issue one than through the online store, which is pretty, pretty interesting. But yeah, it's been really fun. I mean, it was fun setting it up and coming up with perks and stuff like that. It's kind of scary at first, you know, but I definitely dig it. I would totally recommend it too for other people looking to, kind of offset some of their costs involved.
Well, but, it's fantastic talking to you about this, and I wish you well in the last few days of the campaign. Hopefully, people can check you out. Check Indiegogo, search for Tiger Lawyer. And full disclosure, I am already a supporter. Thanks very much, Ryan.
Thanks so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
All right, thanks, Keith. And I'm just going to talk about mine. A full disclosure, I haven't actually conducted the interview yet. The interview will be conducted shortly after we do our recording here. But it is James Israelson, and it's The Adventures of Joe and Nancy, Volume 1. And we're going to drop the interview in because I'm confident I'll get it right now. Hey, everybody, it's Mo here, and I am with James Israelson, who has been kind enough to grant us some time on We Talk Comics to talk a little bit about his project over at Kickstarter. So, James, why don't you tell everybody a little bit about yourself and kind of your history and how you've gotten to be where you are right now.
All right. My name is James Israelson, and for the past about 12 years, I've been into all sorts of writing, ranging from short stories, screenplays, poems, and I just now recently got to writing comic books because I want to get a story of The Adventures of Joe and Nancy out into the public. So that's...
That's kind of where you're sitting right now. So how long have you been doing The Adventures of Joe and Nancy?
The Adventures of Joe and Nancy actually started about 12 years ago when I first started writing as short stories. And so I've been writing them forever. And more recently, I started to thinking about how to get Joe and Nancy into a movie because I like making films as well. And so I started to go to film school for the sole purpose of making a Joe and Nancy film. But then I started to contact creature shops and special effects places, and I realized how much making film actually costs. And so I started looking into other ways to get Joe and Nancy into the visual world. And then I found out about comic books, and so I started researching, and that's basically.
So were you a big comic book reader yourself before you started doing Joe and Nancy?
Not so much, actually. I read Batman a lot, I guess. He's my favorite superhero. But, yeah, I don't really read a lot of comic books, no.
Okay, so you just kind of saw the potential for the medium to tell a story like this and thought that it would fit. Where did the kernel of an idea for the inspiration here for this come from?
The inspiration of Joe and Nancy came from... I grew up watching adventure films like Indiana Jones and The Mummy, and So I like adventure stuff a lot, so I incorporated that. And also family-friendly stuff like MacGyver also filters into the storylines.
Oh, excellent. I'm a huge MacGyver fan. So it's actually funny because MacGyver has a comic book coming out. And earlier...
Yeah,
he did. And I was marking out for that earlier in the show when it was announced to me. And there's a little bit about a debate about the quality of MacGyver, but I'm a huge fan. So we got off on a tangent. But okay, excellent. Oh, you know what? That's very cool. So you were doing this as a web-based comic for a while?
Yeah. The idea was to have it published from the very get-go. And so I started contacting Dark Horse Comics and Image Comics, and I was sending them submissions and comic scripts and storyboards for the film that I originally had planned. I sent that to them as well, but no one got back to me, and so I was kind of discouraged. So I went into a comic shop and I talked to an owner of the comic shop, and he told me about web comics, and so I started looking into those, and yeah, so I decided to make a Joe and Nancy web comic.
So did you get, once you started doing that, did you start to get some, I don't know, a little bit of a buzz going, a little bit of feedback? And kind of how did that affect your writing of the book, if you did?
Feedback? Well, I guess I've been getting the same feedback from the same people for about 12 years. The comic, it didn't really take off like I thought it would. I'm thinking webcomics like Axe Cop, you know, that one took off hugely. So it didn't take off as well as I thought, and I haven't gotten a lot of feedback from it.
No?
No, not really.
No? How long has it been running now, though? You say, as a webcomic itself.
As a webcomic, it's been running for about a year or so.
About a year. Well, I mean, that's understandable. It's still in the growing stages then.
Right.
I can tell you when... Now, you're the creator and the writer, correct?
Creator-writer, yeah.
Okay, so who else is working on this project with you?
I found some artists on DeviantArt. The first artist is Marcelo Salaza. He's actually been published in Marcosia Comics, and he's done a lot of stuff. He's been working in the comic industry for about 20 years. And the second artist that I'm working with now, his name is Kiki Logan. He does a lot of stuff like game art and a lot of freelance stuff, and he's actually brand new to comics, but if you go on the webcomic, you can see how well he does with comics.
So you kind of are writing this, you have the idea for this book as a movie first, you said, right?
Right.
So kind of have you changed, have you found that writing it for a comic book has kind of been able to get your vision across, or have you kind of noticed that this is a different medium and kind of changed a little bit the style and the characters and the story, or kind of how is that working out for you?
Writing a screenplay and writing a comic script are very different. And as far as getting the idea across, I think it works very well. I think it might even work better because with less money, I can do more as far as storylines and epicness. So there's that. So I think it might even do better as a comic than a film.
How about getting the artist to kind of convey your vision? What kind of communication do you back and forth do you have with them?
The first artist, he's from Mexico, so it was harder to communicate with him because he. English obviously was a second language, so we had a little bit of a hard time communicating. But I learned from that, and now with the second artist, along with the scripts, I'm sending him reference photos, video clips, some of the panels I sketch myself and send those to him, and to really, you know, like you're saying, getting my idea across.
Okay. Now I'm looking right now at your Kickstarter page. And I'm kind of scrolling through here and looking at a little bit of the black and white and the different pictures. And also, of course, you have your another web page as well where the actual web comic is host. And looking at that as well. So I'm seeing a couple different art styles. One that's a very kind of a realistic art style, and one that's a little bit more, funky would be a good way to describe it, perhaps. So who's doing what here?
When you're talking about realistic, are you talking about like the cover?
It looks like the covers and that type of thing.
Yeah, okay, so the cover is done by Roy Yugang. I found him on Elance.com. Yeah. And it like a lot of other stuff, it was originally supposed to be a teaser poster for the movie. So I wasn't really thinking about a comic book at the time it was made. But then with the funkiness with the other art, I decided to go with a animated look for the actual comic. Because mm-hmm. I always figured that Joe and Nancy would be more cartoon characters than real people, because all the stuff they go through is kind of out there, outlandish stuff. So
the one here on your Kickstarter page, which artist is that? Because you mentioned a couple different ones that you've worked with. And which one is it that I'm looking at here?
Is it the colored one? Or
On your Kickstarter page itself.
There's examples of both artists on there.
Okay.
The colored one is made by Marcelo Salaza. And then the one where the giant robot's attacking the city with laser eyes, that's by Kiki Logan.
Okay, that's Kiki.
So there's examples of both of them on there.
Now, how did you get the idea to head over to Kickstarter? Who brought that to your attention?
I got the idea because I was in film school, and as a class, we raised money for a film, a student film, with Kickstarter. So I figured, hey, I have a pretty good idea, so might as well try it as well. So.
And did you look at any other kind of crowdsourcing or funding ideas to get the book off the ground, or did you kind of go, Kickstarter's the one right away, and what was it about Kickstarter that made you go, that's right? Not just that I've heard about it, but I like what this can do for me.
The first crowdsourcing thing that I tried was Indiegogo, and that was a disaster. I raised $10. I funded myself. But with Kickstarter, I like it better because, as you probably know, like, if you don't raise all the money, you don't get any of it, uh-huh. which is good for you and the backers, because if you only raise half the money, then you're stuck trying to do the whole thing with only half the money, as opposed to getting all of it. So there's that.
And you are, at the time we're recording this, you got 31 days to go, and you're just over $1,200, almost $1,300 of an $8,000 goal. So I guess you're pretty pleased with how this is. That's certainly more than $10.
Yes. Yeah. I've been doing a lot of stuff trying to get the word out, and I think it's working.
Excellent. And you know what? How did you come up with the amount that you needed? Was that just the $8,000? How did you come up with that amount?
I looked at tons and tons of Kickstarter for comics mm-hmm. before I started my own, getting ideas for rewards and stuff. And $8,000 seemed to be a recurring theme, so I figured I might as well try $3,000 as well. So,
yeah, I want to go through here kind of what you have for pledges. Let me see, you got pledge $1 or more, that person gets your deepest gratitude and name on the web comic site. $7, they get a PDF version. $15, PDF of the graphic novel and exclusive Joe and Nancy wallpaper. $20. And this one has a lot of backers here, I'm noticing. 13 backers, which is more than some of those other ones, which is really cool. Receive a full color copy of the 120-page graphic novel along with a PDF copy. And they add $10 for international shipping. I'm in Canada. Does that count as international shipping?
It does.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. Well, that's good to know. It's funny because I'm only a few hours from you in Canada, but it's still cheaper than it would be driving gas with the prices nowadays to go to edit. So,
oh yeah.
You have $35 or more. You have four backers for this right now, and that's receive a full copy of the 100-page, 20-page, and a high-quality limited edition print of Joe and Nancy fighting the Santa werewolf. So now I'm going to just pause a little bit and go, Santa werewolf, awesome, Tell me a little about that.
I don't remember where I got the idea for it, but it just seemed to make sense. Joe and Nancy, they go to a mall for last-minute Christmas shopping before an office party. And while they're there, the mall Santa Claus turns into a werewolf and starts wreaking havoc on the mall, and they have to go stop it.
Excellent. That's fantastic. That is fantastic. Of course, at $50, they'll get their name in the book. $60, they get drawn into the comic as a villain. Is that correct?
Yes.
That is excellent. And you also have another one here. What is it you do here? You get drawn as a wedding guest. So people, yes. From what I'm seeing so far, they would rather be drawn in as a villain than as a wedding dress. If you had asked me before you did this, I could have told you that.
Yeah. Well, I was noticing that a lot of people were going for the villain thing, so I figured I might as well try work in another drawn in somewhere else in the book. But yeah.
Okay, and so kind of you got we can keep going here, but kind of running near the end of our time. But anything else you want to tell people that they should pledge, and kind of what do you have to say to your backers?
To my backers, I say a huge thank you. Obviously, can't do this without you. And people that need to back, I would say that Joe and Nancy really is about classic adventure stories, and it's family friendly, and it's very awesome.
It is. It looks like a lot of fun. I just looking at this art style too. The cartoony style. I think it just gives us such a fresh look. The other thing, though, I mean, just looking also at the coloring. Some books are better black and white, but these books, these really seem to pop, the color processing you're using. So how did that come about? Because I think this is really, really looking like high-quality stuff.
Yeah, I found a company on Elance.com called DVO Media, and I hired them to color it, and they brought back amazing things.
Yeah, this really does look great. So I'm going to let everybody know that I think they should back you, because I'm looking at the quality of this, and I'll be very pleased. So thanks again for your time, James. Anything else you want to plug? The floor is yours.
Please back. Do it now.
I'm not begging, but I am begging. That's excellent. You know what? Hopefully people continue to support you. I see you're doing well, but more is needed. And I get the feeling this is going to be one of the funnest books of the year. So hopefully people will continue to support it. I'm looking forward to reading it. I'm just looking at this picture of them. The Santa werewolf holding up Joe and Nancy behind a Christmas tree. And Nancy's pretty hot. And that's one of the great... One of the great images in the history of the world, I got to say. So, thank you, James.
Thank you.
So, of course, that was I really do want to thank James for his time. And, Brett, you tried to get an interview. Didn't quite work out. You're still efforting to do so. Why don't you talk a little about that?
That's right. Well, on Kickstarter, there's Leah Hernandez. Her project is called The Garlics. It's a cute thing in vein of Magic Trixie and stuff like that. So I think it looks really interesting to me. She's not that close at this point. She did say that she was going to grant an interview, but she is the biggest difference with Leah and a lot of the people that we're talking to is the fact that Leah has 20 years experience in the industry. She is a veteran. She has support from Kurt Busiek, Neil Gaiman, Jimmy Palmiotti, etc. So there is a lot of people there that are supporting her. And so I think I would like to talk to her because I think that she would give us a different perspective on Kickstarter than somebody who is just new to the industry. And so I will continue to endeavor to talk to her, and hopefully I can bring that to you shortly.
Chris, give us your last one.
All right. I sat down with Julian J. Burton about his Indiegogo project, Salta, this week. I found it interesting because this is a book that is in the very beginning stages of being built. He definitely has some interesting ideas about strong female characters. And I'm supporting this book just because I'd like to see how it develops. He doesn't have a permanent artist on it, so really, I just want to be in on the very ground floor to see how this begins and ends. And super nice guy. Here's the interview. I'm sitting down today with Julian J. Burton, the creator of an Indiegogo funding project called Salta. Well, welcome to the show. Well, Jay, you're probably the one to explain this. What exactly is your project?
Well, my project is an action comic series about a female superhero named Guinevere Hines. Her alter ego name is Salta. Now, you spell Salta backwards, and you have the word Atlas. You know, we all know the mythical god Atlas, the one that holds the heavens on his shoulders and all that good stuff. And, you know, make a long story short, you know, I came up with the idea at a comic convention 3 years ago when me and a couple of business partners of mine were selling, you know, a sci-fi novel. And I seen all these, you know, incredible superheroes, you know, all these bulked up guys, you know, the Hulk and Superman, which I'm fanatics of. And I said, you know what? And I look at a lot of the female superheroes, I'm like, you know, a lot of them are not really, it's a lot of one-hit wonders out there, you know what I'm saying? I mean, you only know a few, Supergirl, Wonder Woman, Catwoman, but, you know, there's not as many as I would like. You see what I'm saying? It's more so nowadays, it's selling more for sex sale thing. And, you know, and I kind of want to give that, you know, so I love to write, you know, the whole rule of story first to my characters. And I thought that, you know, this would be a unique character, you know, Salta, you know, just to kind of help revamp superheroes, you know, get their names out there. You know, bring kind of like that balance to the comic industry. And, you know, to be honest with you, just bring some good storytelling. And I think people are missing it a lot, you know, in comics nowadays. It's taking such a twist. And I think every generation, there's also some kind of dark hole that happens in the comic industry where writers and creators are challenged to kind of, you know, step up at that time and then show what they can do. And right now, I think it's one of those times. And with Salta, I think that, you know, this can happen. It's very fun. And she's an archaeologist that was trained by her late grandmother, who was renowned in the profession. And her grandmother died when Salta was, Guinevere Hines, a.k.a. Salta, died when she was young. And Salta decided to carry on this family trade. And doing so, she stumbled across the mythical tomb of the god Atlas. And not knowing that, you know, these celestial powers are harnessed in this tomb, in this mound-like tomb. And after further research, you realize that there's, you know, deities in so many universes or whatever trying to, you know, capture these powers for, you know, certain reasons that's beyond her comprehension. And she realized that there's nobody to pretty much say, hey, you need to use these powers to protect us. So she decided to do it herself. And, by doing so, they take on all kinds of adventures and, you know, different universes and all that good stuff. And, you know, she actually finds out later on in the series that she's actually celestially linked to these powers, giving her a right to use these powers. So it's no coincidence for her stumbling across this mythical tomb. And that's pretty much the story of her. And I right now focus on the first issue, and we're trying to get the funds on Indiegogo. And, you know, they're really much for the funds for my creative art team. Those guys are incredible. And I think with the help, the right help, we can get this going. I'm very excited about the story itself for the fans, comic fans.
Obviously, the female empowerment angle is important to you. Your tagline is revamping female heroines. Is there inspiration in your life that you're drawing upon for this?
You know, that's a good question. That's a very good question because, you know, I think a lot of it is, you know, and to be honest with you, I haven't thought about that on a personal standpoint of view until you just asked that. But some of that's true because I've had, you know, women growing up in my early youth that was very strong women. and have inspired me and, you know, influenced me into this day as a man. And I can say to you that that experience has probably carried over and transitioned to me as a person, and probably is a strong reason why I'm writing such a character and taking time on this character. You know, it's not just female superheroes I'm trying to revamp. This is a start point, you know. It's a universe we're trying to create upcoming heroes, but this is the character I want to start off with first for various reasons. But I would say that is a strong reason why.
Now, how long is your first story arc? You said you're just working on the first issue right now. Is it a self-contained story, or are you planning multiple issues right away?
Well, I'm planning multiple issues right now. It's a 4 limited issue series.
4 issues.
One story. Yeah, one story arc. But I'm taking it one issue at a time for us getting the fun and stuff. But this is going to be a series, an ongoing series. Right now, from the start, it's a 4 limited issue series.
Now, I looked at your proposal on Indiegogo, and you only refer to your art team as your art team. I really like the couple pics in the gallery, and I'm kind of curious, is your team locked in right now, or what sort of situation are you in right now with as to the art?
Well, actually, I had a guy in Pennsylvania Philadelphia that did the complete artwork for all the stuff that you see, all the content you see right now for Salta. And his schedule is so hectic that, you know, he's like, hey, this is a phenomenal idea, Jay. I wish I could really do more of it, but my time is such crunch time, because he's a freelancer. He does commissions all the time. And he just suggested that, you know, go ahead and get more funds up, you know, so you can get a team of people that can dedicate more time to this project with you. So right now it's in the works of, I have various artists that I'm collaborating with, pitched the idea to, that are actually on board, actually a team of people. They call it Almighty Street Team, these guys in Philadelphia as well. And so, you know, that's pretty much it. You know, it's going one artist to another, you know, on good terms though. And getting the funds up for these guys. If anybody knows, it takes a lot of money to get your artwork done, you know what I'm saying, unless you're artist yourself, so.
Oh, yeah, no. We Talk Comics definitely know it is not a cheap proposal to get this stuff done. And having multiple artists work on a project, we've seen in the past, it can be a huge advantage for you, because every artist is going to bring their own interpretation to your work, and the more artists that you can get on a project, I think your comic book's going to end up stronger.
I agree. I really agree with that.
Okay, I'm always interested in how a writer such as yourself sees himself in his protagonist. Now, obviously, you have very little in common physically physically with your protagonist. How do you relate to her?
Well, Chris, I thought I did. You like my long red hair? No, actually, to be honest with you, that's another good question. The relation between me and Salta psychologically, there is really none whatsoever. You know, it's a character that drove my heart based off inspiration of different people I know. Now, I would say that, and I'm going to get brownie points for this, buddy, my wife is a big, you know, inspiration for us, a profile of Salta, you know, from the features, the hair, the eyes, the build, and some of her characteristics and, you know, her strengths as a person. And, you know, that was a big inspiration. You know, I think, you know, I got the idea from my artist to say, hey, you know, I want this character just like this based on the features of my wife. And I send them emails of a lot of wedding pictures at home, you know, individual pictures. He's like, oh, dude, you're going to get brownie points. I'm like, hell no, for a lifetime. But I think a lot of features come from, you know, inspiration from my wife and some of her characteristics as a person. You know, but like I said, the idea is just, you know, it's just me transitioning the idea on paper. but I don't relate to her whatsoever. It's more so my wife and other women that I've known in my lifetime.
As to the character, I think in your proposal, the strong characters definitely come across, and I do understand that. However, I am not 100% sure of the world this takes place. Even the time period, the clothes are right. Definitely not modern. Is this what time period does this take place? What sort of
right,
world is
right, it? Right. And I'm glad you asked that because I was going to break that down. Actually, the first few pages that you see on Indiegogo, the content is taking place in a time period where she time traveled to 16th century Spain. Now, that's part of her powers. She's able to time travel through, you know, the Atlas helm. You know, she's put the helm on the Atlas, and she's able to envision his memories and his powers, and able to time travel to, you know, pretty much in any time of history. And but the story itself takes place in modern time. You know, it's a modern time piece. It's just the first few pages of content. You know, it's a time piece. So it's an up-to-date story. She just had various powers that, you know, sent her on various, you know, and not just time travel. She travels in different realms and different universes. So I kind of wanted to present that first in the content. Well, it was only content I had, but to let her know, see how diverse it is, to have people like, yeah, what is this? It's pretty interesting. Where is she at? So by the time they get the comic, you know, they realize, oh, okay, you know, she's in the modern world. You know, this is just part of her abilities. And I explain that a little bit, you know, in the description of the story on the page, Indiegogo page, but kind of want to show it more, to show more of a diversity instead of showing, you know, the typical, you know, stereotypical ways, you know, women are presented in comics. You see what I'm saying? It's over the top a lot of times.
Oh, definitely. I do get that. Now, do you have any inspirations that are working into your comic books, such as other comic books or movies or anything like that? I know you work in the film industry. Are you taking inspiration from any of that stuff?
As far as storytelling, that's the biggest inspiration to me. Because, you know, I battle with a lot of, you know, categories of entertainment, whether it's acting, writing, producing, directing. And I just, like I said, storytelling is very, very important to me because it reaches the soul to so many individuals. You know, so many people like Green Lanterns and your Batmans and your Supermans and your Wolverines and your Hulks and Sentries. I mean, you know, a lot of times because people can relate to those characters. And maybe yourself, but I know I do. And in my own way. And to me, that storytelling that takes time to, that's been an inspiration, you know, for various characters and various writers that take time to develop characters. And I think that inspiration for me is incorporated with everything I've been involved with, you know, as far as entertainment, you know, different categories. And people I have a chance to be around, other storytellers, to say, you know what, I want to be fair to storytelling. That's been my biggest inspiration, to be honest with you.
What comic books are you reading right now, or are you?
Man, I read tons of comic books, man. Right now, I'm reading the New 52 DC Comics, you know, pretty much everything, every character, you know, all 52 big characters in DC that they're actually revamping the storylines of. Coming to the end of that, you know, I read a lot of classical, you know, comics from Ghost Riders back in the day, you know, when it's Danny Ketch and, you know, back in the 80s, you know, the 70s, Hulk, you know, just do a lot of research as well. Actually reading The Dark Knight that was presented back in 1986, Frank Miller artwork. So I read various stories, and those are just a few right now that I'm reading. So it's kind of like I don't just stick on one story arc for one time period. You know, it's like I go back and just, you know, dig up stuff from this year, that year. As long as it's a good story. So right now, yes, it's The Dark Knight, 1986, artwork Frank Miller, The Hulk, 1976, The New 52, what's going on right now in the DC Comic Universe, and my man, the Ghost Rider. So.
Yeah, no, those are all good. I love The Dark Knight, and my personal Ghost Rider is definitely Johnny Blaze. Let's forget about Ketch, but...
me too.
Thank you very much for doing this.
All right, awesome. Guys, like you say, thank everybody who gave us their time. We're going to talk a little bit more in our final plugs, a little bit about those guys. But first off, it's time to do some reviews. Of course, it's the world famous We Talk Comics, We Views.
We're saving you from bad comics.
Here I come to save the day.
So, Brett, why don't you open up with the first one?
All right. Well, I'm going to have to open up with Kiss. And as my my review on Comicosity said, you wanted the best. Well, instead you got this comic book. It This comic is
I feel like I don't have to bother giving a review anymore. I wish I had had that line, but you basically just summed it up.
Yeah, it's not the best at all. It does a lot, tries very hard to put to shoehorn Kiss references into a story that in Prohibition era United States of America, where Kiss doesn't really belong, and I feel like maybe there's a story there, but you know, it's just so badly written that I just don't know that I could really tell. I mean, really, for a Kiss fan, it's passable, and I think if you're not a Kiss fan, it's horrible. So,
this was awful. I mean, bad, stale, wooden characters, and I think the worst dialogue I've read in a comic book this year. I have nothing more to say. Anybody else want to jump in?
Yeah, I will. While I was reading this book, I realized something. Although I like Kiss, I don't think I've ever really loved a Kiss comic book. And I'm talking to several Kiss fans right now. If anyone has ever read a Kiss book that, you know, gets over the readable level, I've read readable Kiss comic books. But that is the best they have ever done. Can you guys think of a readable or better than readable book?
No.
I want to read a good Kiss comic book.
Work
and that's why
once.
I keep buying these things. That's why I put it in this podcast for us to review. I wanted a good Kiss comic book, and I got this. What? Give me something, guys.
Wasn't
I'm disappointed.
Didn't Todd McFarlane, I think Angel Medina was the artist in the 90s. They had a long
Circus. I read it. Yeah. It was readable.
Yeah, there's... I mean, here's the thing about Kiss. You may not know this, but they're whores. And they will put their name on anything, regardless of quality.
But
you know,
a good one.
I'm the guy who has the Kiss Compendium, the 3,000-pound volume of every single Kiss comic that has come before. The truth of the matter is that the likelihood of me reading it is completely slim. But being a Kiss fan, I say to myself, well, it's there on my shelf if I need it. Thanks.
Is that the reprints of the Marvels, the ones with the blood in the...
No, it's everything. It's literally every comic book up to this one that has been printed by Kiss.
You're a brave man. Like I say, they're whores, they'll sell anything. Their comic books are proof of that. Keith, did you have anything to add?
We
covered
crap it. About shit I own. You guys made fun of
shit.
Me for owning the Godzilla thing, man.
I own the Godzilla thing, too.
Well, somebody made fun of me for it. Because it sucked, and I can't defend it, but...
It can sit next to my Kiss compendium,
level,
and they can
man.
Fight.
I think that this book was only sucking until it got to the point where they introduced the Elder as one of the key plot points of the story. I'm like, I don't even know if you know anything about Kiss, let alone about how to write a comic book. Because if you're focusing on the Elder...
Songs of the Elder, the least popular Songs of the Elder, the least popular Kiss album ever.
Which you're making the crucial linchpin of your story.
Well, that's why I say they're shoehorning Kiss elements in just left and right, and it's like
they're making a really bad drinking game.
Here's the thing about this book. I personally thought this was actually a good book until page one, and then it fell off a cliff.
Yeah, because some of the covers were pretty nice.
And then I got disappointed. All right, Chris, give us another book.
All right. Well, let's do the big one this week, Spider-Man by Bendis. this, of course, is the big crossover between the Ultimate Universe and the Marvel Universe. The first time these characters have ever met. And I enjoyed that meeting on page 23. No, I believe it was page 20. It's a 22-issue page comic book, and it took them that long. Once again, zombies on the last page. I am betting that nowadays, I'm going to get zombies on page 3. Why can't we get that? Let's just get to the action, man. Who cares about all that other crap? Nothing happened in this book. I'm a little upset about it. And I'm especially upset because I want to like comic books. And this week, judging from the two we've talked about so far, I'm not liking comic books. I'm getting a little bit antsy. I'm getting a little bit mad. This is pissing me off. Let's go on. Somebody else take it over for me.
Keith, go ahead.
What's that old phrase about 5 pounds of shit in a 4 pound bag? Well, this is 4 pounds of shit. This is 4 pounds of shit in a 5 pound bag. There's definitely not enough to fill 5 of anything in this book. I got to agree. Like, there's as much story as, you know, the preview copy could have told me. Like, you could have told in a...
The ashcan, like, usually has more.
Yeah, the ashcan told me half the book. I mean, it's always a challenge when you've got a 20-page book when you do a 5-page preview, but I felt like I still had pretty much the whole story from the preview pages I saw in the giveaway a couple weeks ago at the comic store. Nothing happens, and the stuff that does happen isn't good. I don't know. I only read a couple of Miles Morales. I don't have a strong feeling for the character. I'm kind of curious what these two are like. What the cover image looks like of number 2 is interesting, but it took so freaking long to get to it. I'm afraid that the number 2 is just going to be them staring at each other for 20 pages.
That may be more interesting. You're right. You said the words, you didn't feel like you got the whole story. That's because this doesn't have a whole story to it. Like, you don't get a story. This feels like a desperate attempt to save the Ultimate Universe. Just let it go, guys. It's done. Brett?
I mean, I read it and I didn't hate it, but the truth of the matter is that it did seem like a 2-page preview book. All I really needed was 2 pages leading up to the last page, and then I would have gotten virtually all of it. And as much as I may want to like it, I, again, just can't really like it because it's, Bendis falling off a cliff.
I was going to ask everybody, does it feel to you like Bendis is overworked, or does it feel to you like Bendis has gotten lazy?
Overpaid opinions? Right now.
Well, yeah, that too. But otherwise, opinions, overworked or lazy?
I believe he believes his own hype. Because, I mean, I championed Bendis for so long. I mean, I found Bendis at AKA Goldfish, his first series. I loved him through Jinx and Torso, and I followed him, and somewhere midway during the Avengers, he started believing what people said about him, that he shits gold, and it's not true. He needs to stop and think about these stories. He needs to take a hiatus, go away, come back fresh, and put something new into his comic books, because he's just not putting anything in. There's no content there. There's no meat for me to bite into. And that's what his books used to have, and I miss that.
Well said, Chris. You know what? Also, he shits gold. We need to get trending on Twitter. That's awesome. Anybody else have an opinion on him, on what, any of that?
He sure as hell don't write gold right now.
No. No, I don't know who's falling off a cliff faster for me, him or Johns. Actually, I'll hate Johns more for what he did to Captain Marvel still. Billy Batson. Brett, next review.
All right, well, let's go on to The Massive. This is a Brian Wood comic book, and I'm a big fan of Brian Wood, and I'm a big fan of this comic book. It is, it's an interesting take on... It almost reminds me of a Whale Wars kind of book, like kind of story. I liked it a lot.
I wish I could say the same, Brett. It's very boring. I don't understand what the purpose of it is. It's just got, you talk about that meat, there's no meat on the bones here. This is just a story, and when it's over, you go, oh, okay, those characters had a little bit to them. Story had a little bit to them. I felt like I was, even though they were giving me background for the world they're in, I still felt like I was coming into issue 8 of a 12-issue miniseries. I've read Northlander's first trade paperback. I really liked it. But I really honestly, I mean, this is better than that Wolverine miniseries that we read from at least issue 1 I gave up that Brian Wood was doing over at Marvel. I can't remember the full name. Brett, go ahead.
Well, I do. It's not that I'm trying to come into that. I do think, though, that it could be one of those books that would be significantly better in trade format as opposed to monthly read.
I just get the feeling at the end of the 3 issues, because I believe it is a 3-issue miniseries.
It's a 3-issue arc, but I think it's not, isn't it ongoing?
I think it's ongoing, but a 3-issue arc, yeah.
Okay. Well, either way, I don't think, I can't see it, anything happening or anything, I can't see there being any purpose, anything to recommend here, not even anything to hate either. I mean, like you say, it's not like what was the name of the Wolverine miniseries? Anybody remember?
I believe it was Wolverine and the X-Men Alpha and Omega?
Yeah, okay. See, it's not as bad as that, because, I mean, that sucked like a $12 hooker making her way through the Navy. Okay. This is just bland. That's all it is. Chris, go ahead.
Okay. I like the art, and I like the story, but this is not a comic book. I at no point did I feel the art and story were married. This felt to me like an illustrated novel, and I just didn't get it. I couldn't get into it. I think if I read a prose version of this, I'd be much more inclined to like it. But as it stands, it just didn't feel like a comic book to me. I can't quantify it any more than that. And you guys know I am overwhelmingly positive, and I'm just not digging this week's book.
I'm just waiting to be blown away by Brian Wood, since we all know how... I know he's talented. Everybody knows he's talented. Boy, am I waiting to be blown away by him. Keith, your thoughts?
I really enjoyed this book. With Northlanders done, and I'm just about to order my copies of the last 2 DMZ trades, so I can read that this summer. It's all finished up as well. I'm interested in him doing some creator-owned work. Not terribly interested in his mainstream stuff. Wasn't much for the Conan, wasn't much for Wolverine. So, looking forward to something where he's got a bit more play, and, you know, political big world creation stuff is what he does well. You know, I love DMZ. So, if that's what I can see from this, it looks like he wants to play in a bigger sandbox as far as creating a whole new post-apocalyptic world. I'm in.
All right, Keith, you go ahead with the next one.
All right, well, there's one big title left. Before Watchmen, Silk Spectre. And I kind of dug this. It took me a while to settle into it. I wasn't sure the first few pages, but I like the influence that Amanda Connor had on the storyline. I like the time that it takes place. I'm enjoying, actually, most that it's not trying to be Watchmen. That was my big fear going into these books, is that it would go out of their way to be like Watchmen. And this is so not. It's its own thing. It's telling a story from that's really building a character that is kind of lousy in Watchmen. Moore himself said that Silk Spectre is just there so there could be a woman in the story. So she's probably the character that is going to most benefit from having spend a little more time with her. So I'm enjoying this, and I really enjoy the art, which, says Amanda Connor, and just a fun style, very 60s in the story and in the art. Yeah, I dug it.
Chris, you looked ultimately confused by Keith's review, so why don't you go next?
Well, I was confused when Keith said that in the original Watchmen that the Silk Spectre wasn't a a well-developed character. She was one of my favorites in the series, and I actually liked the interplay between her and her mother in the original. And this seems to be telling a story that I had already conceptualized in my head as to have happened. I don't need that done. I would have liked this story to be something else, to tell adventures of the Silk Spectre. And this was just sort of stuff that I had already imagined happening. This didn't need to be told. It was alluded to in the original series. I wanted new adventures, not ones that had sort of been alluded to. It's not anything new. It's readable. I just didn't like it. It was just sort of, oh well. I mean, it's Darwin Cook, so you can't go too wrong, but at the same time, it didn't blow my socks off.
My review is that I refuse to read it based on principle. Brett, your review?
Oh, this was a really hard book for me. Because like you, Keith, I think the art is fantastic. I think that Amanda Connor does a great job. But Chris, I go back to what you said about The Massive, about how the script and the art don't feel like they go together. And that's my biggest problem with this book. To me, I don't feel like the art matches the script terribly well. And unlike you, Keith, I don't like what Amanda Connor brought to this. I actually wanted a more Watchmen-style story. And instead, I got this. And this is the reason, to me, why I feel that why I would have been concerned about Before Watchmen is to get books that to me, that don't feel like they fit along in that universe. I would be perfectly happy to read this book if it wasn't a Before Watchmen book, and I'll bet you that I would enjoy it quite a bit. But for the first issue, you know, at the end of the day, it annoyed me quite a bit, and so I didn't like it. Like, I will read all of these prequels and go throughout them all, but I hope it gets better, and I hope that I do wind up liking it, and I feel like it will have a tie to the actual Watchmen series. But this is one of those ones that I'm kind of sad, because it's just like, oh, now I feel like you're taking something away from the Watchmen universe.
I have a question, because I am avoiding these books. Watchmen, I believe, is a Vertigo imprint, the trade paperback that's on my shelf. Are these also Vertigo books?
No.
No, they're regular. It is its own imprint.
It's its own imprint. So I'm kind of curious about the content-wise, now that we're two books in. Watchmen, like I say, is a mature readers. There is a little bit of adult language and certainly some adult situations in the Watchmen miniseries. I'm kind of wondering about the presentation of these from that. What are they rated? Is there a mature readers label on them or anything of that nature? Kind of your thoughts. Keith, go ahead.
Yes, they are rated M for mature. Which isn't a rating we're seeing, I don't think, anywhere else in DC right now. The Vertigo book may be rated that. I mean, so far in the two books, there isn't anything, you know, violence or sex-wise necessarily to do that. But next week we get the comedian. That's where it's all going to happen, is my expectation. I imagine that to be quite a mature book.
Can't wait for that one.
All right. Okay, Keith, we're going to jump back to you for our next review.
All right. Our next book is an indie brought to us from Bleeding Ink Comics, written by Jesse Grillo. And tying into this week's topic, it was funded through Kickstarter. And it is a graphic novel called Sensory Distortion. And Jesse did meet his goal. He had some interesting benefits that you could get through the Kickstarter. No one took him up on his top one, which was $3,000 pledge. He only had a $3,000 goal on the project, that he would get a tattoo of your request of any sort. So no one took him up on that, but he did reach his goals and produced this comic, which is available through bleedinginkproductions.com. And Sensory Distortion is a graphic novel essentially about a super drug. It is describes it on his site as a group of college kids take a trip in search of a good time and find far more than they bargained for in a Native American plant. I quite enjoyed this story. The art is a bit rough in places. It's kind of a horror movie story, though. I could easily see this adapted as a low budget or even a found footage kind of film. You know, it's basically college kids getting into a lot of trouble with super peyote, and I liked it, and I think it's worth taking a look at through his site. It's available in a couple of different digital forms.
Very cool. It's actually one I'm gonna read. I didn't read because I kind of misunderstood the direction we were going on this one, but it's one I'm looking forward to getting to. Brett, did you read this one?
Yes, I certainly did. You know, I liked it as well, Keith, and I agree with you on that on how it feels kind of like a college horror movie, but in the first little while, I actually felt, especially with the art style, I actually thought it reminded me of some of the more early Vertigo books. And I think that I liked that part of it as well. It was kind of like Vertigo meets college horror. So to me, this is two things that is kind of right up my alley. And I definitely enjoyed it. It seemed to be the most full storyline that of some of the books that are there. And so I definitely approved of this one.
All right. Awesome. Chris, your thoughts on it?
It's funny that Keith mentioned the movie thing, because I found myself thinking a lot of the John Carpenter movie In the Mouth of Madness while reading this book. And unfortunately, I don't particularly love that movie. High-quality art, or actually, I sort of dug the roughness of the art. I thought for a drug story it was appropriate. And I'm going to throw back to something I said last week about Harbinger number one. I didn't like anybody in this. These are awful people. Why do I want to read a comic book that I can't see myself in these people? So I'm sort of on the fence. It's high quality. There's a good story there. But I didn't find myself enjoying it. I just sort of found, my God, is the writer of this going to commit suicide? It's depressing. I didn't like it. I want it because I am obviously having an emotional response to it. I want to recommend it. But at the same time, I just can't. It's depressing. Didn't like it.
Well, Chris, I got the feeling we didn't like it pretty early, and then you must have said it a few more times. So tell me, what did you really think? Wait. Yeah,
sorry.
Sometimes things don't.
Well, no, I just hate failing a book on a personal preference rather than a degree of quality, because I thought the quality was there. I just didn't connect personally to it, and I'd hate for somebody not to buy a book just because I couldn't relate to these awful people.
Well, you know what, but unfortunately I think that's part of storytelling, is that's part of the process. But I do understand what you're saying. Let's move off. I don't think there's any last reviews to do. WeViews is over, correct?
Correct.
Mm-hmm. All right, we're going to move then into our final plug. So, Brett, please go ahead first.
All right, to repeat, Brett, 2 T's, _ WeTalk on Twitter. Brett at WeTalkPodcast.com. Chris Comic Canuck, he He was so kind last week to be on our show, and I totally forgot to mention his website, comictherapy.com. So you really should go to comictherapy.com. But I also want to talk about The Garlics, Leah Hernandez, and I think you should check her out on Kickstarter and possibly throw some money down on that. Otherwise, that's pretty much it for me, and don't read Kiss. And moving on.
Chris, go ahead.
I'm Chris at WeTalkPodcast.com, Chris_WeTalk on Twitter, and support nowadays. I need this book. I need this book. I have a reaction. It's 300 pages. Throw 10 bucks at this guy's way. I need this book. And Salta, definitely throw a couple bucks there too. Just starting out, interesting art, strong female characters, worth your support. Keith.
All right, I am Cub Reporter K on Twitter, and you can email me at keith@wetalkpodcast.com. And make sure to check out the one-pager of Tiger Lawyer in the next issue of Hell Yeah, and support Tiger Lawyer number 2 on Indiegogo.
Now, one question for you two, both Keith and Chris, is do you know what the minimum bid is for these books?
$1.
$1. Both of yours, and I'm guessing the same as well, Keith?
It's 1 or 5. I don't remember off the top, but it is quite low.
Okay, let's say it's 1. Let's say it's 5. Let's say it's 10. The point is that I know we're bringing up a lot of books to people, and it seems like a lot to support. But really what you can do is give to these creators who love this medium, love it as much as anybody who would listen to a show like this. And you can support them for very little. And so we're going to ask you to do that. James Ayersworthen, again, Adventures of Joe and Nancy. And that's a webcomic that's been running for a while. So you can check out the work, support that as well. And, we're really, really appreciate everybody who came on this show. I'm going to get to a couple other plugs here. First off, Paul O'Connor, Lombox Graveyard. He runs one of the best, maybe the best comic book monthly blog on the internet. It's just fantastic. Kind of taking a look at mainly old school books, but just some other stuff. He's done his first podcast for us. I have listened to the preview. I'm going to go in and edit some things, and it is spectacular. It's probably better than this show already, and we're pretty damn good. So that tells you how good this is. It's honestly fantastic. I think everybody check it out. You're going to love it. It will be up on, I believe, the third Tuesday of every month. So once a month we'll be getting that. It's about 30 minutes long. We're going to get to that. We're also proud members of the Comic Podcast Network. So you can always check out the Comic Podcast Network and find some other comic books on there, comic book related podcasts. So definitely recommend that to everybody. And other than that, I think we're probably done. I am Mo, at WeTalk Podcast, or Mo_WeTalk. If you're interested in blogging, it doesn't have to be on comic books. It could be on any subject or podcasting. Send me an email. Tell me your concept, and we'll see if it works with our site. And if not, maybe I'll just give you some hints on how to get started from what we did. So certainly feel free and do that. And we're going to go out with, because I need to write a blog. We Talk Wrestling. I'm going to write a blog on TNA's initial Hall of Fame here. As I need to do that, I need to eat supper, and I need to watch me some MacGyver. So I'm going to do that. But first off, we're just going to end with Kickstart My Heart, but not the Motley Crue version. We're going to go out with an independent band, The Start. Nice to hear kind of a countrified acoustic version of this great song by a female singer. It's really, really cool. Might be even better than the great original. It's awesome. So we're going to go out. Always want to give you something different. We're going to go out with that. Thank you very much. OUT.
When I get high, I'll speak. Top, you're funny, cause you're drugging me.